CBSi in the world. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Gadi Epstein, the China Affairs Editor for The Economist magazine, observing a development in China that is significant given all the reporting about the genocide so named by the U.S. State Department and I believe the Foreign Ministry in London and other voices. The genocide against the Uyghur people in what is called Xinjiang was once East Turkestan. This genocide has moved people to make declarations that are extremely aggressive about how they won't do business, how maybe there should be a boycott or at least a reconsideration of the Olympics. However, the Chinese Communist Party, the brains behind the Chinese Communist Party, are pushing back oddly. Gadi, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. The three aspects of Chinese grievances you list are the humiliation of the century of belittlement and occupation by foreign powers, one, the poverty that led to starvation, two, and now this third one. How is it described by the party? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Good to be with you. Yeah, the third, these are the three afflictions, and this was a term that was coined in 2008. If you remember back to another Olympics, the Beijing Olympics of 2008, there was unrest in Tibet, demonstrations in Tibet, in the months leading up to that. And there was a very severe, security crackdown by China that led to criticism abroad and protests abroad, especially of the torch run that China was doing in advance of the Beijing Olympics. And, so this term, the three afflictions, was coined. The first being what you mentioned, the first two, being beaten by foreign powers or the center of humiliation, being starved by poverty. And they feel like they've conquered those two. The third affliction was being scolded by the rest of the world. And that one is one that they don't feel that they've conquered quite clearly. And what they resolved to do not long after that, and even before Xi Jinping got to power, was to try and empower their external propaganda apparatus, their external messaging apparatus. And this is something that Xi Jinping took to heart. And he actually spoke specifically about these three afflictions in a speech in 2015 and talked about how they had not resolved this problem of being scolded. And he has told propagandists, you know, state media journalists and diplomats to tell China's story well abroad, but also to push back. And so you've heard about wolf warrior diplomats. That's kind of come out of this, but also a very well-funded, well-invested external propaganda apparatus around the world. And one that is very willing to get nasty and personal, in attacks on critics. And that's what we've seen of late with Xinjiang.
Sanctions. Are sanctions a threat to China? What are they doing about the governments that are talking about or already have moved sanctions because of the genocide?
Right. So the sanctions, you know, they're mostly of symbolic power. They're targeted at senior officials. You know, if they have bank accounts outside of China, that would be a problem for them. But they generally don't or not supposed to. They're targeted at, Chinese officials, like official departments, like public security bureaus. These are entities which won't really interact with the sanctions that much. They could come into play when companies are trying to determine who to do business with. So if those entities try to buy something, technology or something from the West, then that kind of that sanction would perhaps be would come into play, whether sanctions by the U.S. or by other governments. And what China's more threatened by is the message that these sanctions send. And so in March, the United States coordinated a series of sanctions with the EU, the UK, Canada, and this related to Xinjiang on senior officials and on Chinese entities that were implicated in the atrocities in Xinjiang, in the abuses in Xinjiang. This is the first time that this kind of coordinated action happened, and it really pissed off China. And China retaliated with sanctions of its own, which, by the way, also are probably not that meaningful. I mean, they can be meaningful in terms of individuals' ability to get to come to China. But it's very unusual. They were sanctioning individuals, think tank experts, elected officials, members of the European Parliament. They took quite a direct, kind of angry response to these coordinated sanctions and leveled sanctions of their own against people in the EU, Canada, the UK, and America.
Now we meet two heroes, at least risk-taking heroes, Adrian Zenz in North America and Vicky Xu in Australia. What have they done to incur the wrath of the Communist Party, which apparently doesn't know about the rule that you never punch down?
Right. Adrian Zenz is a favorite. They're both favorite targets of Chinese propaganda, and they've come increasingly nasty attacks on them. Adrian Zenz is a German who's been living in the United States of late and who has done extremely important research on Xinjiang, on documenting the extent of the internment camps, on documenting the extent of forced labor in Xinjiang. He did a report a few months back about the cotton picking industry in Xinjiang and the use of potentially hundreds of thousands, more than a half million Uyghurs in labor in what might be and what seems to be coercive labor conditions. Vicky Xu in Australia, Chinese-born Australian, has done similarly important work on forced labor as well, where she documented, especially in a report about a year back, the labor transfer program where Uyghurs were being sent to the provinces outside of Xinjiang to work in factories by the tens of thousands. And the issue there with forced labor is really where it connects with Western activism on Xinjiang. And this really upsets China because it leads to this talk about boycotts, including of the Olympics. It leads to government action in the U.S., banning the imports of cotton that comes from Xinjiang. And that very much upsets China. It raises the profile of the Xinjiang issue. And so they see Vicky Xu and Adrian Zenz as threats.
Is this a break in pattern to your understanding, Gadi? Who's the audience for intimidation against somebody who is not a citizen of China?
Right. It's not entirely new that they would, push back, but the level of personal attacks and the aggressiveness of them and the nastiness of them is on a new level in recent years, in the last few years. You wouldn't have seen this kind of intensely personal attack in kind of a previous generation of Chinese propaganda. It would be more general kind of condemnations that don't pick out people by name. And what they're really doing here is trying to intimidate future critics, people who they want to keep silent, things that you cannot measure, which is people who self-censor or will not talk about China in a negative way for fear of retaliation. A good example of this is the case of the National Basketball Association when Daryl Morey, who was then an executive with the Houston Rockets, tweeted out in support of the protests in Hong Kong. And the response was vicious and immediate online and from officials in China. And they stopped broadcasting NBA games on national television. The fallout cost the NBA, according to the commissioner Adam Silver, hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, one thing you have not seen since Daryl Morey tweeted is anybody else tweeting about Hong Kong. And in fact, with only one exception, has any NBA player said anything critical or indicated anything critical about Xinjiang or Hong Kong. And there was one Instagram share of a story critical of Xinjiang by one NBA player last year. It was like a minor thing. I mean, China perhaps let it slide because no one noticed it. What is noticeable is that people are reluctant to say something about China if they have business interests there.
Gadi Epstein for The Economist magazine, the China Affairs editor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.